Welcome back, everybody, to Four Winds Fellowships. We are continuing our series. This will be part number six in our series on pristine monotheism, that is, the doctrine of God and His Son, as it was understood from the very beginning of Christianity, before it evolved into the various views that we have today. Now, last time in lesson number five, we were looking at John chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. You probably remember it says there that all things originated through him, that is referring to Logos, the Word, and without him, not one thing originated. And then we looked at the grammar, how that the sentence should end there, and then verse 4 should begin with what has originated in him was life, and the life was the light of men. Now, what's really important about verses 3 and 4 is the contrast between what originated through him, that's dia autou in Greek, versus what originated in him, which is en autou in Greek. There's clearly a contrast, because he says absolutely everything originated through him, but only one thing originated in him, and that was life. Now, before we move on to that, it's important to understand that dia autou, through him, is a the preposition dia is a preposition that refers to agency, that is, the use of another to accomplish something. And we see this being used all throughout the New Testament, especially with reference to Christ. Paul talks about the fact that, you know, God is reconciling the world through him, dia autou, in Ephesians chapter 1. In Acts 2, I believe it's 22, it says that Peter in his sermon says that that God performed the miracles through him, using the same language that we see there as well. All right, some people try to interpret that as meaning on account of him or on behalf of him, but the grammar will absolutely not allow that. When the object of the preposition dia is in the genitive case, which it is here, which is autou is in the genitive case, then it has to refer to agency, not on account of. All right. Okay, so moving on from that, in John 1, 4 and 5, let's read 4 and 5 again at the top of the screen there. It says, what has originated in him, as opposed to through him, was life. And we talked last time about how that, what that's essentially saying is that Logos was the first life. He was the first living being, apart from God, of course, who is eternal. So what originated in him, that is Logos, was life. Paul refers to Christ as being the first produced of all creation in Colossians 1, chapter 15. And Jesus refers to himself in Revelation 3:14 as the beginning of the creation of God. Again, placing his origin at the beginning of the creation, the beginning of the 6 days of creation. All right, so then it says, and the life, that is, and here you'll notice it's capitalized, the life was the light of men. It's capitalized here because life is being used as a term or a title for this person called, whose name is Logos. All right, so the life means the person who is called the life, the one who originated, that is, life originated in him. It says he was the light of men. And this is a really important statement. Okay, the life is the person, the light of men. He's again using a sort of a descriptive title for this same person who's called Logos. So he's called Logos or Word. He's called life, the life. And now he's called the light of men. And of course, light, we know light is a reference to divine revelation and understanding from God, right? You know, David says, your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path. So the idea of light in Scripture, when it's used in these metaphorical ways, is in reference to God providing his wisdom, his knowledge to mankind. And then it says, and the light, this is important, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not take hold of it. Now, what does that mean? Well, the light, the life is the sun. It is Logos. He was the light of men. So he is obviously interacting with mankind to provide knowledge of man. The light shines in the darkness. Or what does darkness indicate in Scripture? Many times, darkness indicates ignorance. Ignorance or deception. All right, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not take hold of it. In other words, the light was largely ineffective. Now, I want you to notice that this is in the past. The darkness did not, past tense, take hold of it. All right. Now, what is this talking about? People have different interpretations. I'm going to give you mine. I believe this is talking about Christ prior to his becoming flesh, that is the Son of God, who interacted with mankind, provided wisdom, provided knowledge of God for mankind, but in large part, mankind rejected the knowledge that he brought. Now, this was certainly true of Israel. Israel rejected the knowledge of God. Now, if you look at this verse here, John 8:12, Jesus, in this passage, Jesus sort of interprets the meaning of what John had to say here, okay, at the top. All right, so John, when he wrote this, he's writing with the knowledge of all, in the memory of all Jesus had to say. And so John makes this theological statement up here. And then he brings later in his book, he brings John the Baptist, the words of John the Baptist, to verify what he has said in his prologue. And he brings Jesus' own dialogue into and quotes him to support what John had said in his prologue. That is John 1:1-18. All right, so look at what Jesus said here. John quotes Jesus later as saying, Jesus spoke to them again saying, I am the light of the world. Now you can see how that fits perfectly with what's here. Christ, the life, was the light of men. Here Jesus says he is the light, all right, of the world. The light shines in the darkness, and darkness did not take hold of it. So Jesus says, I am the light of the world. The one following me will certainly not walk in darkness. Note the contrast here. Darkness here, light here, but will have the light of life. And that's because Christ is also the resurrection and the life, as John records also. All right, so Christ identifies himself as the light, which some might say, well, the light up here is not the same light as the light here. Well, then why is John putting this language here? All right, look at this passage. This passage is really, really revealing. In John chapter 12, 35 through 41, then Jesus said to them, and this is the unbelievers, the unbelieving Israelis, the light is still among you for a little while. What's he saying here? He's referring to the fact that he was there in person. So Jesus calls himself the light in this statement also. The light is still among you for a little while. Walk while you have light, so that the darkness may not overtake you. And the one walking in darkness has not seen where he is going. While you still have light, that is Christ, believe unto the light. Now, how do you believe unto the light? Of course, we believe unto Christ. That's stated many, many times in the Scriptures. So that you may become sons of light. Again, the knowledge of God that's revealed by Christ himself. Jesus said these things, and departing, he was hidden from them. Yet having done so many signs before them, they did not believe unto him. Now notice here, unto him, here it says, believe unto the light. It's very clear that what's being said here. Christ is the light. All right. Yet having done so many signs before them, they did not believe unto him, so that the word of Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, which he said, quote, and now he's quoting Isaiah 53, Master or Lord, who has believed our report? And to whom was the arm of the Master revealed? Now, the arm of the Lord or the arm of the Master is a topic for another lesson, which we'll probably get to down the road in this series. But that's a metaphor also for the Son of God. Many times in the Old Testament, we can actually prove that. All right, but we'll pass over that for now. All right, to whom was the arm of the Lord revealed? Therefore, they were unable to believe, that is to believe on Christ, believe in the light, because Isaiah said again, quote, He has blinded their eyes and has hardened their heart so that they should not see with their eyes and apprehend with their heart and might turn and I might heal them. This is Isaiah chapter 6, 9 through 10. Now notice how the light is being referred to. John is quoting this passage from Isaiah in this context where he's talking, where Jesus is talking about the light. All right, actually Jesus Jesus made this statement up here, but starting in verse 39, this is John's comment about what Jesus said. All right, so he says, therefore they were unable to believe. All right, so he has blinded their eyes, has hardened their heart so that they should not see with the eyes and apprehend with the heart and might turn and I might heal them. Now notice verse 41. This is really important. These things Isaiah said when he saw his glory and spoke about him. Now, who did Isaiah see and speak about? This is really critical. In Isaiah chapter 6, that's the passage where Isaiah was called to be God's prophet. And Isaiah says that he saw the Lord high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. And there were seraphim, and they were saying, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. And then Isaiah says, Woe is me, for I am a man of unclean lips, for mine eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Now, but who did he actually see? Did he see God, or did he see someone else as God's representative? It must be God's representative, because John writes here that Isaiah said these things, talking about their blindness, Israel's blindness, right? Because they're not heeding the light, which is Christ. Isaiah said these things when he saw his glory. Well, who does the his refer to here? And it says spoke about him. Who do these two pronouns, his and him, who do they refer back to? They refer to Christ. Isaiah saw Christ, and he saw his glory and spoke about him, that is Christ. Note the two quotes that are here. Okay, the first one is from Isaiah 53. That's when Isaiah spoke about him, that is Christ. And then the second quote from Isaiah 6, 9, and 10 is when he saw his glory. That's indicated in that passage. All right, saw the Son's glory, even though Isaiah says it was the Lord, Yahweh. All right, but remember, Yahweh's agent, Yahweh's messenger is called Yahweh many times in the Old Testament. And we're going to talk about that also in future lessons when we deal with the concept of the messenger or angel of the Lord who appears in the Old Testament. All right, so what John does here is he quotes Jesus' statement about being the light, which is again relevant to this passage up here, the fact that blindness and darkness is essentially blindness, as we see here when he quotes they should not see with the eyes and so forth. So John is clearly applying Isaiah's prophecies in Isaiah 53, 1 and Isaiah 6, 9, and 10 to Christ. That is, Isaiah saw Christ. Now, this is important because in John chapter 1, as we will see when we get down to verse 18, John says no one has seen God at any time. Well, then who did Isaiah see? But then John answers the question, the only begotten Son, who's in the bosom of the Father, that one has made him known or declared him. All right, so it's the Son who Isaiah saw in the temple. All right. Okay, so let's move on to the next slide. Now, what I want to do here is we want to read through verses 6 through 12. And I want to prove to you from the grammar that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is the Logos, or the Word, who through whom God created all things. All right? And we're going to prove this by showing this, the grammar and the pronouns that are being used in the first verses of John's prologue, but especially in verses 6 through 12. All right, so let's read 6 through 12, and then we're going to point out some things. A man originated, having been commissioned from beside God, whose name was John. This one arrived for a witness, so that he should testify concerning the light, so that all may believe through him, that is, through the light. Now, notice that him here, this pronoun, has to refer to Christ, not to John. All right? Do all believe through John? No, all believe through Christ. All right? That's important. So the him here is referring back to the same person who is called the light. Now, the fact that the light is in fact a person is clear as he continues. He, that is John, was not the light. Okay, well, John's a person. So he's saying John, that person, John, was not the light. Well, what does that imply? It implies that there is another person who is the light. All right? So the light here, with the definite article, is not just talking about something abstract, that is revelation from God. It's talking about a person, and it's using the light as a title for that person. All right, so he, that is John, was not the light, but came so that he should testify concerning the light. And of course, we know, what did John testify? Did John testify to all of the knowledge and revelation knowledge that Jesus brought to mankind? No. John testified to who Jesus was. All right, John testified about him as a person. So the true light, this is Christ, which enlightens each man, comma, was coming into the world. Now, what does that imply? That implies that he wasn't yet in the world prior to this. All right? Now, look at verse 10. He, and that is the same one, him, here, he was in the world, and the world originated through him, and the world did not know him. Now, what's he talking about here? He's talking about prior to his coming in the flesh, the same person, prior to his coming in the flesh, was in the world. Notice it says, the true light, which enlightens each man, was coming into the world. This is an anticipation of his coming into the world. And then it says he was in the world. That is, he was already in the world prior to this. He was in the world, and the world originated through him. Now, this takes us all the way back to the very beginning of John's prologue, verse 3. It says, all things originated through him. Here it says, he was in the world and the world originated through him. So he's clearly taking us back to verse 3 there and identifying this one that's talked about here in verse 10 with the one who's talked about in verse 3, who is Logos, through whom God created all things. All right. And the world did not know him. Now, he came into his own. Now, this statement, he came into his own, this word own is neuter in Greek, which is why you see things here. All right, then the word own here is masculine in Greek, and so that's why it implies people. Okay, so these, even though these two words are added to the text, they're required by the gender of the word own in both instances. All right. So he came into his own things. Now, this is the result of this. He was coming into the world. Now it says he came into his own things, and his own people did not receive him. I want you to note the sequence of events here. This is critically important. The true light, which enlightens each man, was coming into the world. We're anticipating his coming into the world, right, as man. He was in the world. He already was in the world. And the world originated through him, and the world did not know him. Now he leaps ahead again to when Christ came in the flesh. And he came into his own things, and his own people did not receive him. All right, you see that? But as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those believing unto the name of him. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to look at these pronouns, and you need to understand a basic rule of Greek grammar. It's one of the first things you learn about Greek grammar when you're looking at nouns. The first thing they teach you in Greek courses is nouns, and that nouns have gender. They have number, that is, they can be singular or plural. They have case also, which is basically their function in the sentence. And then we have pronouns. Pronouns are just like nouns, but they don't specifically name the thing or the person. They point back to something that has already been identified. All right. And that thing is called an antecedent. That is, it came before the pronoun. All right. Pronouns, this is the rule. Pronouns must agree with the antecedent, that is the thing or person that they're referring to. They must agree in both number and gender. So if the pronoun is singular, the noun or the person that it's referring to that's already been mentioned has to be singular. If the pronoun is masculine, then the thing or person has to be masculine in Greek. If it's feminine, it has to be feminine. If it's neuter, it has to be neuter. Okay? You can't have a masculine pronoun referring back to something that's neuter in Greek or something that's feminine in Greek. All right? It has to refer to something that's masculine gender in Greek. All right? So the singular masculine pronoun him, and you can see it here, 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 and here in just these verses. It's a singular masculine pronoun. It's translated him in Greek. It's autou. If it was in the nominative case, it'd be autos. If it was the direct object, it would be auton. But the point is, this pronoun must have a singular masculine antecedent. It has to refer back to something, a noun that is singular and is in the masculine gender. All right, so if we look back through John's prologue so far, from verse 1 all the way down through verse 12, because an antecedent obviously comes before the pronoun, there are three nouns that are masculine singular. All right, and these are the possibilities. The first noun that's masculine singular is logos, which is translated word. That's in verse 1. In the beginning was the word. So the very first entity that is introduced in John's prologue is this person or this entity called logos or word. Okay. The second masculine singular noun is the word God. All right. It says in the beginning was the word or logos. The word was with God. The word was with God. So God is also masculine and singular. And then we get down to verse 6, which we just read, a man originated. We have a man originated having been commissioned from beside God whose name was John. So a man or John is the third possible referent for all these pronouns. Okay? It has to be one of those. Now, the pronouns cannot refer to light, even though light is a title used for the same person, it's the word light is neuter in Greek. So it cannot refer to light specifically. So it's not calling light a him here. It cannot refer to life. Remember, it said what originated in him was life, and the life was the light of men. Life in Greek is feminine, singular. All right. So light is neuter singular. Life is feminine singular. That means it cannot refer to those. Okay. It's got to refer to logos, meaning the word. It's got to refer to God, or it's got to refer to John the Baptist. Now, if you try to, one way to see if the passage makes sense with these different possibilities is to just replace the pronouns. See all these pronouns? Replace them with these three possibilities. And what you find out is when you do that, it makes no sense unless it is logos. It has to be logos, okay, the word that's referring to here. Let's read it that way, okay? Let's try the word God out here. A man originated having a commission from beside God whose name was John. This one arrived for a witness so that he should testify concerning the light so that all may believe through God. Okay. He was not the light. That is God then, I guess, was not the light, but came so that he should testify concerning the light. The true light, which enlightens each man, was coming into the world. God was in the world, and the world originated through God, and the world did not know God. Okay, well, that would make sense in that statement. God came into his own things, and his own people did not receive him. But as many as received, that is God, let me restate that. God came into his own things, and God's own people did not receive God. But as many as received God, to them God gave the right to become children of God, to those believing unto the name of God. Now, does that make any sense? Well, you might be able to force it to make some sense, but it's clearly not what John is talking about. John is clearly talking about those who receive Christ, not those who receive God. All right? And also believing unto the name of God. We know that there's no other name whereby man must be saved but through Jesus Christ, according to Acts chapter 4, verse 12. All right. So clearly, there's no question that all of these pronouns, him, 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 his, him, here, all these pronouns can only refer back to Logos, who was in the beginning with God. All right. In the beginning was Logos, or the Word. And Logos was with God, and Logos was God. That is, he was God's agent, which is why he's called God. And that all things were created through him. So if Logos here, if all these refer to Logos, which they clearly do, then Logos is the one who was coming into the world, who was previously in the world, and the world originated through him. I want you to notice here, through him, the exact same clause. Let's look down here. In verse 3, everything through him originated. Dia autu egenita. In verse 10, the world through him originated. Dia autu egenita. Exact same phrase. All right. There's no doubt, there can be absolutely no question that the one being spoken about in verse 9, 10, 11, 12 is Christ. There's no doubt he's talking about Christ, but he's putting Christ in this prologue. He's putting him all the way back at the beginning of the creation. You cannot switch here. These personal pronouns cannot refer to some abstract thing at the beginning of John's prologue, and then suddenly they're talking about Christ without any clear indication that there's a change of antecedent. All right, it has to be the same antecedent. Otherwise, he wouldn't use the pronouns. he would just use the actual noun, right? He would say, if he meant Jesus here, he could say, as many as received Jesus, to them he gave the right to become children of God, to those believing in the name of Jesus. John could have easily written that if he just meant to talk about Christ coming into the world alone without having any preexistence. But he doesn't do that. He uses these pronouns to go all the way back to the very beginning of his statement, beginning in verse 1, and places the same person that's talked about in verses 10 through 12, places that same person, by his continual use of these pronouns, places him all the way back at the creation and identifies him with the Word or the Logos. All right. So the conclusion of these verses, John 1, 1 through 12, is this: the one whom we receive, in whose name we believe, is the same person through whom everything originated. That is Logos. There is no other grammatically correct interpretation of this passage. You have got to play games with the grammar in order to come up with any other conclusion than this. All right. Okay, well, that's it for today. I was a little shorter than usual. I'm going to try to keep the lessons coming up a little bit shorter than I have in the past. And next time we're going to pick up in verse 13 and 14. Verse 13 may surprise you, but we'll get to that next time. All right. God bless. It's been a pleasure being with you, and we'll see you again next time.